Hello and welcome back to another podcast at Cycling Mo, your cycling informant. Today I am delighted to be joined by Quinn Simmons of Trek Segafredo. Quinn, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Whereabouts do we find you in the world today?
I'm home in Durango, Colorado, in the US.
Mountain time.
Yep.
Cool. Right. So looking back at this season, we'll dive straight in and look at Strada Bianchi. So obviously you've got a well-documented history with gravel racing. You debuted the year before at Strada and were riding very strong, but crashed and had some bad luck. This season, again, looking pretty good, finished seventh overall. How was your race that day?
Yeah, Strada, it was the first real target of the season for me, especially, like you say, with the year before was my first time. I felt like I was properly at the front of a big race, and then to miss out with the puncture there made it easy to focus the winter going into Strada. And, obviously we wanted more than seventh, but I was a clean race and, nothing held me back other than my lack of fitness. So I was happy with it. And I think it's one of the few times where I've done all that I could in a one day race where I showed up actually healthy and got to go for it.
Is that a race you want to keep going at and try to get better and improve in?
Yeah, it's definitely an objective for next season. Unfortunately for guys like me, it seems that the best climbers in the world keep deciding to come back for it. So I think for me, it needs to be a really hard day. And, if we could get some rain or even it snowed there before and, just add that extra level. And I think that would be something that helps. But yeah, for a rider like me, I think it's something you can do on a special day.
Then next stop was Tirreno, and you won the King of the Mountains jersey. You were in the break 2 days. Was it the plan before the race to go for the KOM jersey, or did that just happen during the race?
It kind of just happened. My goal was first to go for a stage and second go there for training for the classics. And the three breaks I was in, unfortunately, none of them made it, but I think it was quite good training. And then, when you're there in the position to take the jersey, you have to do something, especially when, I wasn't quite at the level to win a stage. So it was nice to take at least something out of it.
And you were in the break on the Queen stage, if I remember rightly, which was the super, super steep climb. It looked really hard on TV. Was it just as hard?
Yeah, that was one of my deepest efforts of the season, actually. I think, pushed the last climb was almost an hour or something right at threshold at the end of a 6-hour day. And, for someone of my size, it's a big energy load to drag your weight up that long of a climb. But, to take my first jersey in a World Tour race, it was a nice prize for me and, I think a good step.
And you dropped Alaphilippe, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, he's not in top form at Tirreno yet, but, anytime you can ride away from the world champion on a climb, it's a pretty cool feeling as a young rider.
Then you go to the classics, you ride E3, Gent-Wevelgem and Dwars door Vlaanderen, but you were DNF in all three of them. What happened at the classics this year?
After Tirreno, I rode my bike, I think, one day and then was sick for almost a week, and then made the decision to come anyways to the classics and just do what little I could to support the team, do the first 100K or work or whatever. And I think by doing that, I just made myself even more sick and ended up after the third one there, just making the call to return back to the US and take a couple weeks off the bike and refocus for the summer. It's obviously pretty disappointing to miss the goal races of the year, but we did everything we could to try and be healthy and it just didn't work out.
And in a way, do you think that enforced break, because you missed the races in April and May and it was only kind of mid-June you came back, do you think that enforced break actually helped you do quite a good Tour de France?
Yeah, I think for me especially, I'm always the type of rider who will go better off of training than off of a lot of racing. And I live at 2,000 meters, so if I could come home and I have 2 months at home, almost all second half of April, all of May, and then first half of June to just really prepare well up high. And then obviously with less racing, you know, you're not quite as tired mentally. So I was able to start straight back in Tour de Suisse, super motivated. And, you know, any chance you get, you know, that you're 50-50 to make the tour roster, you're going to come back motivated, I think, no matter who you are.
And then you go to Tour de Suisse and it's another KOM jersey. Again, was that just something that evolved through the race or a target before the race started?
I wasn't a target, but you know, I thought it'd be kind of funny to get both of them, just especially as I'm not particularly a climber. But again, you know, Swiss was, you know, to earn my spot at the tour as well as that final preparation, and you know, the goal was a stage win there. But you know, it was nice again to take the mountains jersey and a small confidence boost before the tour.
And you came pretty close to a stage win, fourth on stage six, and what was one of the weirdest mountain stages I think I've ever seen in my life. I mean, you got pretty close. Do you think maybe your efforts earlier in the race cost you a little bit on that day in the finale?
Yeah, for sure it might have cost me, but also, you know, I could look at the numbers I pushed on that stage and, you know, to go first over some 45K climb and then something that was 12K to the finish or whatever. It's always a stretch for me to make it up that. And, you know, I can look at the numbers I did and know that I was on a pretty decent day. And obviously, you know, if I was on super top form, it'd be a problem because we're still 3 weeks out from the tour at that point. So I was sad to miss out on the win, but you know, that was the day I got the call that I was going to the tour, so wasn't too sad.
So the run up to Tour de France, so you'd raced the Vuelta the year before, so you've got a Grand Tour in the legs, but the build up to the tour, were you nervous? Was it more excitement? What was the feeling like kind of in the week leading up to Tour de France?
I was pretty nervous the whole time training before Tour de Suisse, just, you know, wanting to make sure that I nailed everything to be able to go. But once you get the call that you're going, it was almost more of a relief. And then it was just excitement to finally be at the biggest race. You know, I came really close to going the year before and unfortunately crashed and ended up not getting the chance. So to finally, you know, be there, and especially at such a young age, and you know, to be able to go for it healthy, it was really exciting more than anything.
What was the opening couple of stages like in Denmark? It looked insane on TV.
Yeah, it was super crazy with the crowds. I mean, I'm American. We're used to American sports where, you know, you're actually a superstar over here. And that was the first time I felt like bike racing was at that level. You know, you're at that team presentation and you just can't see past the crowd of people. And then each stage is just lined the whole time. Plus, you know, at the hometown hero Mads there on the team, I think everyone was really primed to try and do a good race. And, you know, unfortunately we didn't get him that stage win at home, but, you know, I think we all really felt the energy and it was a cool experience.
Then stage six to Longwy. So crazy, probably one of the most insane starts I've seen for a long time. And you end up in a three-man break with Fuglsang and Wout van Aert. So how did that happen?
Yeah, at one point, I think like an hour and a half in the stage, I decided to like swipe through my Garmin for the first time and check the power. And like, I remember looking down at the number after 2 hours and saying, no way we can keep riding this hard. And then we kept riding that hard for three more hours, but that was insane. I think that was probably my hardest day I've ever had on the bike, but also one of the most exciting. I mean, it was my first breakaway in a really big race, and to be there with, you know, that caliber of those two riders, it's a really cool experience again. And then also, you know, it's a direct comparison to show me, you know, exactly where I need to be if I want to race at that level.
It looked like, once you eventually established the break, it actually looked like you were having fun for a while.
I mean, yeah, you're off the front of the Tour de France with arguably the best rider in the world in the yellow jersey. You know, it's painful, but, you know, part of me is still young enough that I'm a fan of the sport, and you're like not quite believing that you're in that position.
Then we go stage 13 to Saint Etienne. Another one of those days where the start was insane. Ghana, Kung and Jorgensen get up the road, and then there's a big group of guys trying to get across, and then it looks like it's not happening, and then all of a sudden we see you jump, give Mads a little look or a nod, get in my wheel, and bam, off yous go, and yous get across. Was that an insane start? I mean, that looked like a big move you did to get Mads across.
Yeah, I was actually more focused on the day after, so I was kind of just sitting in the back being a bit lazy, and then they came on the radio that, you know, Madge is doing good and that we all needed to commit to that. So I ended up riding, you know, basically through the whole group over the climb before, and then just being in a good position when I saw everyone else sitting up, and from there you just kind of have to go. And once we bridged across with only the seven of us, and the gap staying at 2 minutes, it was hard to really fully believe in it to begin with, but just to see the way Madge was pedaling on the bike and his expression, there's not really a question in my mind anyway if he was going to win that day. I think my favorite story of that was actually we were riding up Alpe d'Huez together the day before, like 40 minutes behind in the gruppetto, and I looked at him and I said, I think you're going to win tomorrow, bud. And then we went and did it. So that was pretty nice for the team. And yeah, really cool for me to get a front row view to him being on a super good day.
I mean, he did look on an insane day. Like, did you just look at him and think, yeah, he's winning this?
Yeah. Well, as soon as it was the seven of us, there was never even a question for me if I was going to make it to the finish. I could see the way he was pedaling, and it's like, yeah, boys, you're done for.
So in the tour overall, you were 5 times in the breakaway, I think. Now, considering it was your first Tour de France, considering your young age, that was a pretty insane effort. Looking back over the 3 weeks, was it everything you thought the Tour de France would be?
It's kind of weird when you're riding it. It really, a lot of the time, doesn't feel so much different from a normal race. But then for me, after the stage, I come back and I always watch the NBC recap with like Bob Roll and all those guys whose voices I'd heard commentating since I was, you know, basically able to remember watching a bike race. And when you hear them and you see the American coverage of the race, that's when it feels like, okay, wow, I've really made it. But when you're in it, it's, you're just suffering for 5 hours a day. That part doesn't change. If anything, it just made me more motivated to go back and to get that stage win.
And you caused a massive story mid-race when you went crazy and shaved off your beard. Like, what was that all about?
Part of it is I thought it would just be a little bit funny. And the other part was the day before it had been like 104 degrees for 5 hours. And, you know, I like having the beard for the style points, but when you're that hot for that long, there's a point where you crack and it has to be gone.
Now, looking back, I mean, you were in a break with Wout van Aert. You raced countless breakaways. How high was the level and how far do you think you are away from being at that level required to win a kind of breakaway stage?
I mean, I think out of the right group, in the right situation, I believe, you know, last year I could have won a stage. But then if you take it how far I am from the level of someone like Wout, I mean, you saw with 20K to go and tear my legs off. So I think there's quite a lot of room for me to make up. But I also know that on, you know, my day, if everything goes right on the right course, you know, I'm able to get it done. But for me, that's not enough. You know, I dream of someday being at that top level, and you know, there's still a long, long ways for me to go, but I do believe that eventually I can make it there.
How dead were the legs after the race?
Actually, I was riding my best number wise and feeling wise in the third week. I think I was more mentally tired just from all the travel and everything and moving from hotel to hotel. My one strength that I have is I don't really get tired physically too often. So I was always recovering quite well, and each day almost felt stronger. I think it was more your head that starts to get tired after 3 weeks of constant racing and moving and all the stress that comes with being in that race.
A lot of people talk about the increase in their engine after their first Tour de France. Like, obviously you're just doing a little bit of training just now. Can you already feel a difference in your stamina, your ability, your aerobic capacity?
It's hard to say this early. I'm taking a pretty different approach to the winter this year. So I've, not at my normal place in training that I'd be right now, but I've done one solid workout, and now I was quite surprised by where I'm starting at from the year. I thought it'd be a lot worse.
Why are you looking to change things up this winter? What are you looking to do?
Yeah, I think as an American rider, you don't get much time at home, and then for me with how cold it is here, I almost, in the last 5 years, I've never had more than a 1 month block at actually proper at home. So this year I decided to stay a bit longer into the winter here. And I've just, if it's snowing, I go skiing. And if it's sunny out, I go on the bike. Normally I head out to California the 1st of November and already start full-time training on the road bike. But I wanted to take a bit advantage of this time at home. And, I think with the skiing and everything, I can develop that same engine and come into the season a bit more mentally fresh and enjoy riding my bike a bit more when it counts.
Now, we've seen you in breakaway stages a lot this year. We've seen you develop as a climber, even though you are kind of bigger naturally than some of these other guys. A lot of people thought you would turn into a classics rider when you turn pro. Just where do you see yourself developing into? What type of rider do you think Quinn Simmons can become?
Oh, it's a hard question. I still don't really know. I mean, I quite enjoy the really hard days, like Estrada, where you're just up and down all day. I really do like that. And, I have a really good kick from a small bunch if everyone's tired. So I think targeting stuff where, maybe it's just on the limit for a guy like me to make it, but you come to the finish line with some small climbers and the chances are I'd have one of the better sprints, I think, would be a good goal for me. And then, also long-term, I think someday I'd like to try for 1 week stage races. I don't know. That's for sure not next year or the year after, but once I naturally lean out a bit more with all the racing, I think it would be a fun project to try and go for the GC in some 1 week races. But for right now, I'm still focused on the hard 1 days and, finally trying to put on a good show in a classic, because other than Strada, I've never really done a good 1 day race. And for me, that's a bit annoying.
You're one of the few riders who skipped the under 23 category. Obviously Remco did it. Juan Ayuso did it as well. Looking back now, you're 21, you've raced a Vuelta, a Tour de France, countless of the biggest races in the world. Do you think it was the right decision to go straight up into professional?
Yeah, for me, I think so. Especially, with a team like Trek, I've had a really good place where they haven't pushed me too hard with the racing and, always a good race calendar that, reaches, a top level for me, but, it's never been too much. And now I'm, like you say, 21, and I already have the Vuelta and the Tour in my legs. Most of the guys I was racing as a junior are starting their first year professional next year. And even though I suffered a lot for 3 years, it's all just money in the bank in terms of training. There's no better training than riding with the best in the world. And now I know exactly what the best in the world looks like and have a better idea of how to get there.
It's contract year for you coming up as well. Does that occupy any space in your brain, or is that just something you put to the side and let other people sort out?
No, I'm not worried about it.
Cool. One other question. Do you still love cycling as much as you did when you were growing up?
Probably no. No, because all the races I like to watch and other races that I do. And then when I'm in the U.S. away from the racing, honestly, I don't really pay any attention to it.
How have you found the experience of moving to Europe as a young person? Has that been challenging, or has that been quite straightforward?
That for me has been the hardest part of the job. I really like where I'm from, and I really like being an American and how we do everything over here. So it's been really hard to make that adjustment, but you know, also I'm in Girona in Spain, so I'm in a pretty nice place with good weather and quite a few other Americans around, and you know, it's just about making it as comfortable and normal as possible. But for me, I still ride my best when I come from training here. I think there's something to be said for being on the home roads at altitude that, you know, I'll never quite be able to replace in Europe, but so far it's been a good challenge, and you know, the team's let me have a really good balance between my time over there and coming back, and I think we're making it work so far.
And what would a good 2023 look like for you?
Would like to start, you know, start the season well. I start in Argentina for the first time, so I'm excited to go down there and race, and then Estrada will be a goal. Hope to improve on the 7th there, and beyond that, if we can have a healthy classics program, and then I'll do again an altitude block back in the U.S. before the tour. And you know, this year it's can't be riding the tour just for the experience. It's going back to try and get that stage win and you know, improve on last year.
Well, Quinn, thank you very much for giving up your time. Looking forward to you smashing it in 2023.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you. Spectacular diagnostics. Full kumite, accumulate pace. First razor blade for the gig, we're moving weight to win the weight. Wise ways, precise aim. Trying to rhyme like this might lead your mind strain. The times change, flight delay, light haze. Thoughts looking like they foundation might cave. The look in my eyes resemble the ice age. The clocks of the crowd, the rent park is way park waves. Like moves saw, move raw. Involuntarily eat your full paw. Feel like a painter who can't do wrong. Fallatio from lazy do fall to Paul Kane. But brought a broad brain with a game, you small change. You do like a solid grand, probably 10. We push it in the hallway, on guard always.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, Nag Daddy. Oh, yeah. I feel like. Should be fossilized in amber. Wise commander, fuck all the lies and slanders. When it come to ill niggas, you sound like a standard. Feathers and quillers, I write the standards. Cobra, cuanto tu me cobra. Tengo dinero, pero no me sobra. You want the flake of the boulder, then I'm introducing the baking soda. Into the Yoda Palace, we go to some blowing hate in circles in Minnesota. Buffaloes in their barrio. Drama with Disco King Mario. Shotty blow in the hands of the Sicario. I reload the pill off without watching his body fall. Porky ass with the mighty gone. Rainbow headband, Sylvester Stallone. Skull and bone, herringbone, wishbone. Went out for the trophy and brought the shit home. Blowing loud endo. Chop the rock, 16-bit Super Nintendo. The cream rises in a crescendo, nigga. Well, now your daddy kicking at. You know what I mean? Jump off the motherfucking cliff live out the district, shit, my nigga. Word. Woo.